want to tell you about something I've used and I truly believe in. Replayer. It's a sideline camera built for youth sports. Just set it up, hit record, and it captures the entire game automatically. No chasing the ball, no holding your phone, just hands-free, stress-free recording. The in-game tagging is one of my favorite features. One tap, and you can mark a big goal, ankle-breaking moves, or a clutch tackle. Then pull those clips for later for review, highlights, or social media. And the live streaming's next level. A buddy of mine actually watched his son's game while flying cross-country at 30,000 feet. That blew me away. If you're a parent or coach at the field every weekend, Replayer is a game changer. Head to replayer.com. That's Replayer.com. And I think you'll be amazed.
Hey, soccer friends. I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of Team Player's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give Team Player a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. I'm not going to say too much other than I do say a curse word either in part one or part two. And I'm so sorry, but it's only once I say it. I guess I say the word twice. And I'm sorry to all the parents out there. It is just me cursing and I hope you all understand. But other than that, I hope you all will take time to listen to what Dan has to say and what we break down. I think it's great information for everyone to listen to. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
I'm Dan Abrahams. I'm a sports psychologist. I've been in high performance sport for 30 years, or nearly 30 years, which makes me feel like I'm getting old. And I was originally a professional competitor. So I wasn't a soccer player, but I was a golfer. And I always, half joke, semi joke, I wasn't a very good pro golfer. I didn't win any money, which is literally true, but I certainly look back and am proud to have played professional golf. When I realized I wasn't going to quite compete with Tiger Woods, I decided to do my PGA course here in Britain. So as everybody can hear, I'm English. So I'm over here in the UK and I became a PGA golf coach. And as I was coaching, my love for sports psychology, the psychology of sport, obviously especially golf, but across all sports grew. When I was coaching, I decided to do all my qualifications, go back, do my degree, my master's degree and my supervision to become a qualified and registered sports psychologist here in the UK. And I've been doing that now for 18 years as a full-time sports psychologist, working across all sports. I've held senior positions in British sport. I was lead psychologist for England golf 2013-16. I was lead psychologist for England rugby going into the 2019 World Cup. I'm currently a consultant psych for Aston Martin Formula One. And as I say, I've worked across all sports, you name a sport. And by and large, I've worked in that sport to some degree. But the sport I've worked in the most would be soccer or football, if we're going to use that term. And about 18 years ago, I started to get involved in what we would call non-league soccer here in England to really learn the language of the game and learn the specific challenges that players face. It really built from there, and I got my opportunity to work in the Premier League around about 2007. And over the last 16 years, I've worked at about half a dozen Premier League clubs. I have worked in a number of academies here in the UK. I've worked globally around the world. I've written 4 books in total, one of them golf, but 3 of them in soccer, one of which very kindly Gareth Bale, the former Welsh Spurs, Real Madrid and LA Galaxy, I mustn't forget that player, came out and said that book, Soccer Tough, my first book, Soccer Tough, really helped him. It changed his life. Not sure it changed his life, but it was very kind of him to say. What else to say? Last 2 years I've been working with Feyenoord in the Dutch Eredivisie League. Very fortunate to work alongside somebody called Arne Slot, Dutch coach who has recently become the coach of Liverpool. So he took over from Jurgen Klopp. I've gotten to work with some of the best coaches in the world of all ages and levels, some of the best academy coaches right the way down to under sixes through to, as I say, people like Arne Slot and Steve McLaren and other coaches who are absolutely fantastic. I have my own podcast myself. It's called The Sports Psych Show. I'm proud to say it's one of the most downloaded sports psychology podcasts out there. It's a great podcast. I'm a distinctly average host, but I have wonderful guests. I also have an online academy. I work heavily in the US, because my books have sold so well. So I work with a lot of players of all ages, from very young players right the way through to MLS and members of the NWSL, US Women's National Team, and so on and so forth. And I also have an online academy that actually contains videos for players, coaches and parents to work together on the mental side of the game. And that supports a number of organizations, clubs, teams, high schools, colleges, and so on and so forth. So that gives you a bit of an idea as to who I am.
I'll start off with going back to your academy. I'm actually getting ready to pitch it to one of my friends who's a DOC of a club here, because I think it is something that could be worthwhile for kids here in the United States because of the culture. Here in Texas, it is win at all cost, and parents need to take a step back. It is one thing I preach as a parent to many parents is development's the byproduct of true development, or winning's the byproduct of true development. Sorry about that. And then my daughter's team, she's been on a team that's pretty much lost for a year, year and a half, and now they're going out and winning. They're actually playing soccer and not herd ball, as I like to call it. And she's 6. And it takes time and patience because parents want those wins and those W's. And any parent that has had kids that have been in programs here, they jump around until they can find a winning team. Okay. And it's a very common thing. I can't tell you how many times we've been to tryouts and we see the same kid trying out for a team that we saw last year at 3 different tryouts or 4 different tryouts, and they're just looking for a team that's winning. And it, as a parent, it breaks my heart. I want a coach that is going to build my kid physically and mentally for the game, and not just as Juan Martinez with DKSC, which is one of the larger clubs here, he calls him Gucci parent and look on social media. And I think it's important. And your academy program is, I think, will help a lot of kids get there. My main focus here today is team culture and team environments, because here in North Texas, if you've never been here in Texas, you know that the sidelines are crazy between the parents and the coaches. I've seen coaches go off on players for a whole 40-minute match. You're talking 6v6, 3v3 with 6-year-olds to U18, U19 players being screamed at like they are professionals. And I don't know how productive that is. Every player has their own environment they do well in. But team dynamics is something I think is so critical. And it starts from the culture of the club to the coach. So from your experience, how have you seen this change players' dynamics on the pitch?
Are you asking me how does the behavior of coaches and parents change the dynamic of the experiences of players?
We can start there.
I'll immediately respond to some of the things that you've said, whether it was when you were talking about my academy there or the brief introduction that you've given to your question there. I'm invested every single day. I'm blessed, if that's the right word, to work with some of the best competitors in the world. Whether that's turning on up at the track at a Formula One event, working with Formula One competitors, think NASCAR in America being the equivalent, whether it's working with the greatest golfers in the world, which I've been there blessed to do on both sides of the Atlantic, whether it's working with the best soccer players in the Premier League, for example. So my brain is very attuned to how people win. Okay, my next book is about how to compete to win. And for example, on my podcast, I talk to the leading professors on planet Earth and doctors and sports psychology, academic sports scientists. I spend all my time as sports scientists, strength and conditioning coaches, and coaches at the very highest level, whose existence in many respects is to help their adult elite competitors, as in those who are adults at the professional level, to win. And I'm saying this as a forerunner to my answer to you, or what I want to say to you, because nobody could accuse me of not being invested or passionate about winning. That I am very much. But it baffles me why adults think that they have to introduce children to sport through the prism of winning and losing. What happened to, let's just begin at the beginning here, before we even begin to get on to learning and developing from a physical, technical, tactical, and mental perspective. Let's start with participation. Surely you want your child to participate in sport for the sake of participation, for enjoyment, for fun. That's got to be first and foremost. I want young people to love soccer. I want them to love football as in American football. I want them to participate in baseball because they want to love baseball for a lifetime. I want them to love participating in sport because they want to run and move and be active the whole of their lives. I want them to participate in sport because I want them to enjoy being part of a team. There are so many other reasons, first and foremost, why you want your 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7, 8, right away through their teenage years, as to why you want your child to participate in sport before we even begin to get on to winning. And that doesn't mean that we push the learning and the winning aside forever. I'm not suggesting that for one second. But we have to start with our lens of the world of sport participation being participation for the sake of participation. And then getting excited about the opportunity for our young people, our children, to learn various psychosocial elements of life through participation in sport, teamwork, leadership, communication, ability, discipline, determination, commitment, motivation, all of these aspects. So first and foremost, it's for fun. Secondly, it's for health. Let's get this clear. This is just ridiculous 6-year-olds who have to win at sports. Absolute bonkers. And that comes from somebody every day of my life I'm writing, working with, zooming into players at the professional level who have to look to win. And we can talk about that complex dynamic in a bit as well. So fun, first and foremost, enjoyment, health, and then psychosocial factors as well. Teamwork, commitment, motivation, leadership, and so on and so forth. Then we can start talking about the learning piece. You know, there's nothing wrong with introducing 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds who for example, get to a point, let's say an 8-year-old who takes their sport seriously. 8-year-olds are allowed to take their sport seriously. That's fine. But we certainly don't bully them into taking it seriously. Surely we have to expose young people to a range of activities across a range of domains to find out what they might enjoy. And if they do enjoy sport, and it just so happens that they turn around one day and say, hey, this is really important to me. I really want to, in as many words as an 8-year-old will declare this, I want to take this seriously. This is important to me. I love doing this. Brilliant. Great. But it's for them to still go there, enjoy what they're doing, take it seriously in that way. Now, good coaching then comprises of those participation aspects, plus introducing young people to learning skills, developing their skills, developing their ability to develop the actions associated with soccer, in our case, because we're here to talk about soccer today, but it's the same with all sports. And again, learning, developing, improving, skill acquisition comes before winning. Because if ultimately we do want our child who perhaps takes our sport seriously to put themselves in a position to be winning or on a winning team or in as good a team as possible in the future, what we know is we want them to learn the skills associated with the sport. And so it's far more important for younger people to be far more invested in, outside of the participation piece, the progression piece, participation and progression. Participation and progression, and the progression piece is acquiring the skills related to the sport. So if we're talking about soccer, we're talking about first touch, we're talking about movement and runs and space and positioning and all these things, which can be gently and appropriately incorporated into activities and coach behaviors, coach instructions from a young age. No problem with that. And at no stage does there have to be any force or aggression or bullying or anything like that. Or there doesn't need to be any interference from the outside world necessarily. There doesn't need to be any cheerleading. There just needs to be great fun, a great learning climate that includes all kinds of things around skill acquisition, creativity, experimentation, fun games, the gamification of learning, all those kind of things. Again, we can go into more detail on. So this is, to me, absolutely imperative. There needs to be a climate of participation. There needs to be a climate of learning and improving and developing from a skill acquisition perspective, injected into fun games so that young people who take it seriously and take it less seriously, because there's going to be young people who take it less seriously, get the opportunity to experience these sports. That, to me, is where it starts. It's only until the later years that we might really start to consider winning in an overt manner, because ultimately, when you're actually in helping young people invest in participation and progression, you're setting them up to win in the future. And that's what people forget. You don't have to win now, but you do have to develop a mindset and attitude about the game, an enjoyment of the game, a love of learning the game, and a learning of the game to be able to win in the future, if that is important at all, which for some people it's just not, which is absolutely fine as well. So that's certainly where it starts for me, and I don't know if anything has triggered in your mind there, but that's would be my first sort of explanation of young people's experiences in sport.
You hit on, I interviewed someone in the past and we talked about the FA model for development of players. And this is something that is lost here in the United States in coaching, I feel, because it's not talked about, it's not published. U.S. soccer has it in the part of their coaching curriculum, but it is not the end all be all, so to speak. So the first from U8 and younger, I believe it's learning, it's training to train. So learning how to train. Then from U8 to from U15, what is it? U14, U15, and U14 and younger to U12, I think it is, whatever the age is. It is training. Now it's training to develop. And the last phase at U15 and older It's training to win. And we lose that model here in the United States. And you just hammered all that. And that this gentleman is from the UK, or from, yeah, the UK. And he talked heavily about it and how it's missing in our US soccer culture. And you just hit every one of those points when you were talking. And I think the first thing you said, it was to play for health. I don't think we as parents, and I'm guilty of this in the past, is we're letting them play for health. It's not just the health of them, but you also talk heavily about it on your social media, the bio, psycho, and
social. Yeah.
Yes. And you have, yeah, you have your little long word. I love it. And it is something that we as parents need to take a step back and from starting from a young age. So what would it be the, how would you describe that? You described it in what you just said, but a little bit more detail, because this goes into the team environment that is so critical for these players to truly develop.
Yeah, please excuse the long word biopsychosocial. And this is actually taken from an American psychiatrist, 20th century American psychiatrist called George Engel, who actually wrote a very important document at the end of the 1970s complaining about the typical biomedical model that enveloped healthcare in America and probably in the Western world. The biomedical being we just look biologically for symptoms and we don't look at the broader range of processes that are going on that can lead to illness. Remember, this was a psychiatrist. So he talked about bio, psycho, and social as human beings. Our human functioning is as a consequence of a keen mix of bio, psycho, social. Our behavior is as a consequence of that. Our learning is a consequence of that. Our performance, if we're going to think about sport, is as a consequence of that. And so this model, the biopsychosocial model, is used extensively to explain human functioning, and we can use it to explain sport, experiences in sport, learning in sport, and performance in sport. So biopsychosocial. Now, let me just translate biopsychosocial. We can think of bio being body. So anybody listening, and think about your child here. So if we think of bio, we think of body. Okay. And we can think of several things related to body with your child. And remember, I'm a psychologist here. I'm not a sports scientist. So please excuse me not being too fluid in the matters of body when it comes to children. The maturation process, the experience of being in a child's body as they're maturing, hormones, neuronal pathways, so the way the brain is wired, the biochemistry of the body, the metabolic system, all these kind of things are bio. So it does indeed go quite deep, but think of bio being body. And I think a good way for parents to think of this is actually the musculoskeletal system. Your child is not an adult, is not a young adult. Your child is a child, and your child, it has a child's brain, okay? That's bio, in a child's body, bio. That really sums it up. Your child is not a mini adult. Your child has a child's brain in a child's body. So remember that, right? So bio, body, psycho, mind. Okay, so biopsycho, body and mind, body and mind. They work together and they constantly influence each other. Now, when we think of psycho, we can think of all kinds of things: confidence, control, concentration, commitment, motivation, emotion, thoughts, feelings. And then we can go to things like leadership and team and stuff like that. So there's an array of things, cognitive development as well, anticipation, decision making, if we're thinking about team invasion sports. So biopsycho. So these things are constantly tied together. And then we've got the social. The social refers to the social environment or the socio-cultural environment that a child experiences. It's their schooling, it's their peers, it's you as their parents. It's the community they're in. It might include race, it might include religion, it includes their sex. It includes lots of different things related to the social side of things. So biopsychosocial. And there's these three forces that are impinging on behavior. They're impinging on experience and behavior and performance and learning and all these things. So does that make anybody's engagement in sport or any activity for that matter quite complex? Absolutely it does. And it's what makes coaching really, really tough, really hard. And as I say to coaches, that young player who's constantly late, are they constantly late because they've got a bad attitude? Or are they constantly late because of the social side of their biopsychosocial? Because actually they've got a complex home environment whereby what's being imposed on them is something that causes them to be late. Or are they constantly late because, you know what, they don't want to be late, but they haven't necessarily been taught how to structure their day in order to be on time? Are they naturally quite low and conscientious, which would be the biopsycho side of things, the sort of the trait, the personality trait that they experience? And then we've got a choice there to decide, well, is that their fault? Or actually, are we going to take them aside and are we actually going to try to help them from that perspective to be on time? Are we going to give them strategies? Are we going to give them a bit of leeway? How do we manage that? That can be tough to manage as a coach. That child who gets angry on the pitch. Again, let's think about that from a biopsychosocial perspective. Maybe from a biological perspective, their musculoskeletal system is maturing, so they're unable to coordinate them themselves like they'd like to coordinate themselves. From a psychological perspective, maybe they haven't been shown any techniques how to deal with that anger. From a social perspective, maybe there's nobody at home in order to help them manage their anger. Again, that all goes hand in hand. What we see on the pitch is somebody who gets really angry, somebody who fouls others, somebody who gets themselves sent off. Again, we have to make a decision as a coach. Are we going to constantly chastise that player? Well, maybe there's a time to do that because maybe they're bullying somebody and there might be justification to chastise that young person. But maybe what we need to do is be able to upskill them because, again, the behaviors we're seeing is because of a keen mix of biopsychosocial, the biopsychosocial pressures. So in short, what I'm saying is that human beings are complex, and that means their maturation, their development over the lifespan is complex, and that makes coaching very tough and very difficult, and it makes parenting very tough and very difficult. And that's okay. It is what it is. It is tough. It is challenging. It is difficult. And we can't get it right all the time, whether you're a coach or a parent. But you can strive to see the behaviors of your child and any child through the lens of this complexity. And when you do, maybe, just maybe, you strike a more sympathetic lens or sympathetic tone of the behaviors that you're seeing. Now, there's lines and there's borders and there's boundaries because, you know, we all have to strike that, and children need lines and borders and boundaries. But it's also reminding yourself that human beings do things not necessarily always on purpose, but as a consequence of biopsychosocial. So I'm not sure if I answered that in slightly broader, more broad terms, but that's really what you're saying.
Looking at this now, taking what you're saying, because we were at a game one time and this player caused a foul. Or we fouled him. I can't remember which happened, but the player kept on moving the ball. And every time the ref turned his back, he moved it again. And the ref, every time he turned around, would put the ball back. And finally, he told the kid, stop doing it, the player. I think we fouled them. It was the way it went down, because it wasn't one of our players that did this. And he kept on moving the ball. And it was interesting, because the dialogue on the sideline was, this is a kid trying to see what he can get away with the ref. And as a parent watching this type of stuff, interactions on teams, and this is something that's, I think, I've heard multiple times from multiple different coaches, it's okay for teammates to be bullies on teams. It's okay. And going back to what you're saying is social. Some of these kids in their outside world of the social side of it, that's what they've learned, is to be bullies to get what they want, mm-hmm. to prove dominance on the pitch. And as a coach, like you said, or even as parents, it's very hard to educate or be better, I might be the better way of putting it, to help these players become better individuals when they grow up. And I'm talking at all ages. You see this from U6 to the professional level. And what came to mind when you were talking is your fourth episode with Damian Hughes, the Barcelona way, and the mantra of more than a club. And I literally have sent this episode probably to a dozen coaches. And to me, it really hit hard, because as a parent, how do we put aside our ego? And this is where I have tried to introduce this on many different conversations. There's three egos I feel when it comes to athletes. There's player-centric ego, parent ego, and coach's ego. And where do we all sit in this? And when we're talking about the team dynamics, how do you advise parents at all ages and coaches to help to be more player-centric, and that the culture they create and the parent culture that's created, how can we help our players be better bound to be better successful individuals? Because soccer is not just a now moment. It is a lifelong journey. Either they'll love the game. You talked about the health side. They'll love this game and play it for the rest of their life, and or baseball, whatever the sport may be. But how do you help coaches and parents better understand the team environment as Barcelona has it, more than a club? I really love that. And you talked about it heavily in that episode, you and Damien did, and you've talked about it in Soccer Tough. And how do you advise families and coaches to be better?
Let's dwell a bit on biopsychosocial with my very uncatchy title, my biopsychosocial model of coaching. I talk about three P's, and I've alluded to two already, but I talk about three P's of coaching, but it could also be three P's of sports parenting. That every coach has to be invested, in my opinion, and every coach is in different ways, and every parent can be invested in, again, in different ways, depending on the age of the person, your child. And as I've said, I've mentioned two of the P's. So three P's that exist: participation, progression, performance. If you think about your club, participation, progression, performance, really there's nothing else outside of what we want our young people and older players to experience. To participate, that's the engagement piece, to engage with the game. Now, today, this week, this month, this season, for the next decade, for a lifetime. To engage with teammates, to engage with each other, to engage with coaches, to generate a love for the sport. That's the engagement piece, right? The participation, the first P, participation. And I would always argue that in the Premier League, participation is the most important thing for the head coaches in the Premier League. I'm sorry, but it is. That doesn't sound very attractive, but it is, because once they lose the changing room, they're dead. And that's how head coaches get sacked, is they tend to lose the changing room. They forget about the participation piece. We can talk about that in a bit. The second P is the progression piece, which is the learning, the developing, the improving. It's the skill acquisition. It's the acquisition of skill. It's skills. The third is performance, and that is the competing piece, and not the winning piece. It's the ability to compete. Let's get rid of winning and losing. It's the ability to compete. So to answer your question, and I do this anyway, I would be saying, particularly of parents of young players and coaches of young players, is you have to create a culture. If we think of culture in team sports as what we say and what we do, we have to orient that towards participation and progression. We have to orient that towards engagement. Our session design, our coach behaviors, everything about our club is oriented towards engagement. And then also to progression, learning, improving, developing. And you've mentioned about that player engaged in trickery, moving the ball, or players being taught to be physically dominant. I think more appropriate is for young people to be exposed, to environments that help them engage with the game with passion, with love, with enjoyment, flourishing, thriving in that environment, combined with being taught skills, being upskilled, technical, tactical, physical skills, mental skills. I don't dislike the word aggression for a 13-year-old. I've got no problem with that. To be mentally assertive, to be mentally have energy forward. If if we want to use the term aggression, that's fine to challenge aggressively, not to get one sent off. All that is fine. But though, seeing those through the prism of skills, not through cheating or bullying or beating somebody up, but it's the development of skills. And when you look at it that way, when you look at it through the lens of participation and progression, especially progression, it's taking a step back and understanding with your coach or with your coach that shouting doesn't serve anybody unless a child is doing something wrong and hurting somebody else or putting themselves in harm's way. Shouting does not serve upskilling anybody. And if you're a parent, shouting from the sidelines does not help your child engage, participate, engage, progress and learn, because you're not giving them room to process the situation, the information that encompasses that moment. If you are shouting at them, if you are trying to help them, it does not help. It deserves upskilling somebody. Deserves upskilling a child. So you do have to, as a parent, take a step back. And I would put to parents, and I think the vast majority of parents, perhaps all parents, do what they do through love for their child. It's just recognizing the nuances and the complexities of sport and sport participation and sport progression. That actually the equation isn't wanting to win equals engagement, equals participation and progression. It's actually exploring and helping your child be passionate about participation and progression. That's vital. It's recognizing as a parent that actually the reality is you are best served giving your child the opportunity to attend practice, give your child the opportunity to learn the game in their own way with their coach, take a step back, be a chauffeur, unfortunately, be the money person. And that is just the reality of it. You don't need to be Jose Mourinho. You don't need to be Emma Hayes. You don't need to be the expert. You can be curious. You can be interested. You can be fascinated. You can ask questions. As long as your child is exploring the game in a healthy and safe environment, that is the most important thing. And you certainly can't force a career. All you can do is give your child the opportunity to discover how good they can be. But they're only going to discover how good they can be if they are experiencing a healthy and safe environment. And that incorporates a lot of participation, engagement, and a lot of progression, learning. That's what I'd say.
I really like that. And you said ask questions, and I'm guilty of this one. I ask a lot of questions to my son, and I kind of trying to get him to see a different perspective, and I'll ask him 15 different ways to finally get him to give the answer that I'm looking for. It's not so much and my wife gets on me about this, because I'm not actually making him think. I'm trying to get him to answer the question that I want. And I know I'm guilty of this. I do it all the time too.
Hey everyone, I hope you all enjoyed this first part with Dan Abraham. I'm not going to keep this short because I'll have a longer sharing at the end of part two. So I hope you all will take time to listen to this week's episode, and then when next week's come out, take some time listening to it. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.